This is June 21st, and the next meeting will not be in July, but on August 23rd, 1992, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well, then, my friends, good morning.
Good morning.
And there was a question, several, but one that came up this morning that I think we'll begin with. We perhaps will move from one to another to another. But the question was, science has now determined that things like atoms have both particle and wave perception. For example, depending on who is viewing the atom, some view it in a wave-like formation, and others view it in a particle formation. And what is the difference? And then the further question, since it is clear, and those of you that have been with this work for these many years realize that Mary Margaret does not begin this process until the wave-like motion is present, so that she becomes very aware of the difference between the wave-like motion and the perception of what we could call more individualized reality. Now, the wonderful man, our good friend Richard, who's asking the question, asks this: is it possible to view, for others, everyone, to view the world through that particular perception? How do you go about it? Is meditation the direct route? What is it all about? So, this is interesting because it was on the agenda down the road for in about a year's time, Richard. So, you're a year before your time, but that doesn't surprise me at all. So, let's go into it since it arose at this moment in time, space. And who knows what will be here in a year from now. So, what you need to really know inside of you is that your way of perceiving external reality is false. It's interesting. It's compelling. Hopefully, it can be humorous. It's certainly dramatic. And it keeps you totally enthralled of the ever-changing face of your external world. Now, at the same time, when you remember that you are perceiving what has been called a camouflage, it is not so, I don't think so factual to say a camouflage, but that there is another way of perceiving the same thing that brings you a totally different experience of what you're seeing. Now, one of the reasons, and you all, not all of you, but many of you know, one of the reasons that people do drugs is because this thing begins to alter. One of the things that entrances people about drug states is that your visual field begins to break down, you begin to see things in another way, you hear and see colors and form and shape, it's all different. And since you don't want to go around your life on drugs, which I think is a marvelous idea, that you not wander around your whole life on drugs, but you still have this yearning, then what is the mechanism? Well, my friends, we have been building on this basic belief for a long time. And when we get into the deeper realms of it, you'll understand that the same things apply that have always applied. Now, let's begin very simply. You see what you expect to see. You are told that you are going to go into a cave and that in the depths of that cave is going to be an immense snake. And with all of your fear and trepidation, you enter the cave and you see this snake. Now, it may be a rope. It could be a coil left over from the telephone company. It could be any number of things. But you will see it and respond to it precisely as if it was what you anticipated seeing. Now, you say that and you believe that, but you see, what you don't understand is the depth of the truth of that simplicity, that you see exactly what you expect to see. You expect to see yourself in a certain way, a certain body shape, a certain response, a certain reflection. You expect yourself to feel a certain way. For example, you wake up in the morning and you very rarely say, what possible wonderful things could I feel today? But what do you say? You say, how do I feel today? Thinking that this feeling is some given that you walk into. You know, the idea that you wake up in the morning and walk through a given life, you know, and if I see this, that will be my response. If I get that, that will be my response. And I'm going to get in that car, and I know how I feel about it, and I'm going to take the same road and the same trip, whatever. You see, you have the idea that you are, do you understand, that you are walking through a given environment, a given reality, a given world. Now, you believe that very strongly, and you honestly believe that the person that you went to bed with that night when you wake up in the morning is the same person that you went to bed with. Well, if you want a little excitement in your life, start believing that it's not. Oh, have to have a little fun. The wonderful, you see, but we are challenging the deepest response system of the human and the training program that you've been under for so many lifetimes. You see, it's really very funny because you had to be carefully trained to perceive in this way, and now you have to be carefully trained not to perceive in this way. But then let's not go into the reasons for that because we've gone into that very often. But a moment of knowing in this moment that the excitement goes with you, hopefully, moment after moment, is there another way of seeing whatever it is I'm seeing? And even deeper, is there another way of responding to whatever it is that I think I should be responding in a specific way? The excitement of creative moment by moment experiencing is what becomes the major focus of your yoga, your path, your dharma, whatever you want to call it. All right? So you begin by listening to windbags like this and that say things like, you can perceive things in another way. Now, the problem is being humans and believing that you have to fix things, that things aren't right. And now we've given you a problem. We've said there's another way of seeing. So then someone says, well, that's great. Teach me. I say, teach you. We're back to where we began. Teach you. Now we have a certain set of rules. Now we have certain disciplines. Now we have to do this. And you all have to do it, every one of you. And so what? Now we have a cult, the cult of seeing, according to some windbag named Bartholomew, which is very foolish. It's not like that. The minute we say you can see another way, you present yourself with a problem, which is how do I do it? The minute you say how, you're off it. The minute you say how, it means I have to stop doing something, I have to begin doing something, and the very act of trying now to become different, now we're back to all of the other how-tos that you have been wrestling with for many, many incarnations. So, at the same time, and this is the total perplexity of speech, at the same time, it is true that certain basic approaches have to be felt in a different way. Now, I did not say you have to change who you are or what you are or how you respond. Never. But what you have to do, please, is to begin to allow something that is already there without you having to fuss it or find it or figure out how to access it, to allow this other mysterious bubbling substance of something begin to move up in you. And how do you do it? You don't do it by the how. You do it by, and you know exactly what I'm going to say. You just relax and allow it. You begin to allow. You say, how do I allow? How do I allow? And I'll say, all right, let's talk about that. Let's talk about this. Ask yourself clearly, please. Do you decide and allow yourself to think? Now, I didn't say to think a certain thought. I say, do you sit there and decide and allow, I'm going to think. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to see. Do you consciously allow yourself to see? Do you make a decision that says, now I will see? Or is there something quite different that is going on every moment of the day and night that has nothing to do with that part of yourself that you consider to be the doer? I would like for you to spend the rest of your life, if it takes that long, paying attention, not changing, not fixing, not getting rid of and adding to, because then we're burdened, aren't we? Now we have another thing to get or to get rid of. Now we're imperfect. Now we have to be fine-tuned. Now we have to be something. And you have been told again and again that it's all here, eminently present, dynamically alive, full-blown here. All right, so Now, all I'm asking is that you do nothing. You do not change anything. You do not become this or that. You just pay attention. You are constantly, constantly in a tremendously exciting, ongoing, dynamic happening that you have never had any control of whatsoever. And you think you do? Then you spend the next years finding out who makes you think. Do you say, ah, Joan wakes up, Joan says, I'm going to think. Or does thinking happen, and then something called Joan, hear it, feel it, participate in it, become a part of it? Pam says, I'm going to see. Does she wake up and say, oh, I'm going to see? Or does it happen? Is it happening? Is seeing something that is intimately innate in your aliveness that you have no control over? Now, I am not saying that you do not have control over whether you like what you see or whether you like what you think, or you can begin to manipulate the act of thinking. Yes, I will agree. You can manipulate. You can choose. You can think this or that, or you can choose to see this or that. That isn't my point. Do you understand the vast difference? You can begin to be aware of, for example, breathing. Do you choose to breathe? You say, oh, I have decided to breathe. I have decided to breathe. I have decided. Now, you can decide to pay attention to breath so that you can deepen breath, or you can shallow breath, or you can you can do any number of things with it. But the question is, is breathing something that you choose, or is breathing something that is spontaneously present, that this thing that you call ashisha participates in after the fact? Do you understand? It is a totally different thing. Dory, it's different. It's different. What is that then? What is that sees? What is it that is the seeing? What is it that is the breathing? What is it that is the thinking? Not what you think about or breathe with, but just the whole bold, amazing something. If you can begin, my beautiful friends, to get the feeling of this amazingly magnificent, spontaneous something that is constantly happening, that you are a secondary witness to. May I say that again? That you are a secondary witness to after it happens, then you will begin to understand what it means to know who you are. Then you will step away from that place that says, I must, I have to, that forces, that controls, that has this sense of a past and a future and the destiny and the guilt and the I have to change and I have to become and I have to get rid of and I have to understand and I have to love. All right, let's talk about love. Do you really think that you walk around your life saying, I choose to love this one? I choose to love that? Do you think that when someone hands you this messy little baby, that you say, I choose to love it? What is this? You say, when you talk about it, you know, and it's always, especially when it comes to love, it's like an illness, isn't it? It comes over you. And then you wander around the rest of your life thinking, what did I do that for, you see? But that initial love that just waves over you, well, think about it. Did you choose that moment to participate in this magnificent something? Because if you did, then you are really quite a magic person. But I think in actuality, if you'll begin to be literal about your life, you'll begin to feel the rambunctious something that is totally out of your control. You know, you've gotten into a lot of trouble because love is totally out of your control. The story of your lives are lots of trouble when it's out of your control. It isn't a mental process. It isn't something you think yourself into and out of. It is something that happens. Now, I've said it before and I will say again. The feeling of loving is meant to be felt by all of you for all people at all times under all circumstances, period. Without any qualification whatsoever. And I want to tell you something. If you'd stop judging and looking and analyzing and begin to do what we ask you to do, which is just to begin being aware, you are going to be aware of something called love that is present. And then you find yourself interpreting it later. Oh, I see. It's Chetak. He's in the room. I know I love Chetak. So therefore, that's what love is. Well, you know, maybe it's a stick. Maybe it's an atomic bomb. Maybe it's an AIDS virus in a vial. You see, the interpretation comes after the feeling. And this is where you get in trouble with love. Something happens, you say, oh, it's that that one. That's what's happening. You grab them and you hang on to them, and then the voodoo starts, you know. You got to keep them with you, and they can't look at anybody else, and neither can you, and all this business. And it goes on forever, forever and ever. Now, and that's all right. It's a marvelous game. It's tremendous drama, and, you know, you have more children on the earth plane due to this drama, and there's a lot of good reasons for it. But that has nothing to do with the reality of what we're talking about. That identification, that projection, that statement out there is a secondary result of an event that takes you, and you have nothing to say about it. Do you understand the difference? Now, do you? I'm asking, have I?
Yes.
All right. Now, it is so incredibly huge, vast, and ever-present that you miss it. Let me repeat. It is so huge, vast, and ever-present that you miss it. You miss the motion of seeing because you begin, the instant you feel it, to translate it into, I see something. Instead of just feeling thought, you begin to identify with, this is my thought, I like this thought is this. This identification happens. You see, the seeing is present, and then comes, I like that, I don't like that, I have to change this. It is the secondary interpretation. When we say to you, and we've said it so many different ways, to become the witness, but now you say, I realize I made a tremendous mistake when I asked you to become the witness. Because what I did was create in your mind an idea of something someone now is witnessing. And I realized, because of the trappings of the terminology, and if you've noticed, I've stopped using it. And so let's forget it. I never said it, right? There is no such thing as the past. I never said it. No. The fact, look, the minute I said a witness, without, you see, it's, having not been in, well, never mind. Body forms see things and hear things differently. You know, a human awareness sees and interprets things differently. So, what I would like to say is, instead of thinking in terms of who witnesses or what witnesses or something, whatever, I would like for you, please, to just be excited about being aware of this spontaneous something. And when you begin to non-name it, when you don't look, you know, when I say the witness, almost all of you go to some place in your mind, in your head, don't you? Or some of you go to your heart, but mostly you witness from your head because most of you have good visual qualities. So you think, well, witness means seeing, and seeing means in my head, and that means my eyes, and then we're lost. So if you'll just begin to move around your world, becoming more and more aware of the reality of the spontaneity after which you respond to it, you are going to begin to be very, very close to this wondrous thing, which is the wave that rises and falls, that has no sense of particular part to it. Now, this is a basic teaching. In whatever time we have left, however little or much that might be, this will be a primary focus. Because in the end, in one magnificent moment, you are going to get it. You are going to be aware that seeing takes place. That you do not do it. That it takes place in an immensely huge, magnificent whatever. But seeing takes place. Hearing takes place. There's no need to worry about who is hearing, who is seeing, who is thinking. The question is to get to the primary part of consciousness, that spontaneous statement that something is out of your control, and that's it. And that's it. I have said to you, until you all want to scream, this is it. There will never be more it than this moment. There will never be any more or less God than there is in this moment, ever, ever, no matter where you go and what you do. But there is one primary when you begin to get back and to just begin to feel. You'll begin to feel something exciting. You will feel seeing. And then later, you will interpret seeing. You will feel thinking. You know, my friends, the reason that we don't ask you to stop thinking is that, first of all, it's impossible. And second of all, when you begin to just feel thinking, what you begin to feel, and some of you I know do this, and well done, those of you that do, is to be able to feel thinking, and there is a rise and fall, and a rise and fall to thinking. Thinking, it rises and falls. And when you begin to not be so interested in what you're thinking, but to become excited about feeling thoughts, you find yourself much happier. You know, and you might find yourself getting illuminated and enlightened as a byproduct. But you see, what you do is you become so small around your thinking because it's all happening in your head, say you. And I say, no, it isn't. I say, no, it. Haven't you ever wondered where thoughts come from? Haven't you ever wondered where do those come from? And isn't this curious thing that they have a saying in Hawaii, and then the same saying is said in Florida, and the same comes up in the Soviet Union. And well, what is all of this? You know, in the days when there weren't even communication connections, what are these marvelous spontaneous similarities that they can track in the children of all cultures? I've told you this before, but the exciting one about in the slums of London and in a village in India, the little ones, they were, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that age group, they were asked, after sitting and doing, just quietly listening to music, they were asked to draw what they saw. And what do they draw? They draw snakes coiled. They draw trees with 7 points on them. They draw stars with all kinds of radiance around them. They draw people with hearts inside that have light coming out of them. Well, what is all of this? What is all of this? Those magnificent similarities that you find when you go deeply and deeper into the symbology of the myths and the stories of all of the great cultures of the world, you come up with the same things. What is that? Well, you know, it's easy for Jung to say it's the unconscious. Well, I don't think you should just let it go with that. I think that you should begin to deepen and begin to walk around with the sense that somehow magically you are awash in an immense sea, that you are this fish, awash in an immense sea of this amazing something, and that when you see it through that knowing, everything looks and feels and sounds differently. And instead of trying to get it, instead of trying to fix yourself or to find a way, if you will just pay attention to what's already happening without you having to do anything. You see, the computer of your response is so quick that, do you understand? It is so quick that you find that you haven't been aware of the original rising. It's called your original nature. It's called your true nature. It's called your natural self. It's called your God self. I don't care. Call it whatever you want. It is that thing that arises, and then the translation comes after. And having been told this today, you will now probably begin to pay attention. Whether you will consciously do it or not, there is a part of you that has now been triggered to the awareness that there is something that comes prior to your seeing, prior to your thinking, prior to your hearing, and now, unless you really aren't interested in this subject, will begin to take hold of your life. Now let's talk about that. You say, I have to do it. I've got to do it. Give me the ways. I have to find ways. I have to have a bunch of techniques and so on. Now, please understand the basic expansion of the psyche. There is nothing that has been stated this morning that you do not absolutely, intimately know fully with your whole being. Now, you realize that on one level, you are pretending to be separated and isolated beings running your own little lives. What you are going to begin to know and to feel when you begin to ask yourself what comes before the fear. Do I will myself to fear? Do I wake up and say, I am going to feel fear? Do you? You'd be very foolish, wouldn't you, to wake up in the morning and say, well, I think of all the choices, I'll pick fear, you see? So it isn't. So what is fear? I'm trying to tell you that fear is God. Fear is it. Fear is as much the reality as is seeing, hearing, breathing. That which comes to you spontaneously without you having to do the mechanism is it. And when you find yourself awash in terror, I know you don't want to hear this, but that's it. That's it. Afterwards, you interpret, oh, I know, I'm afraid of this. But the feeling, that feeling that comes out without any kind of conscious directive that just full moves into you, this is why we keep saying, when you awaken in the fear state, instead of trying to say why, just stay with the feeling without as little explanation, with as few storytellings as possible. Just kind of get a wonderful little grin on your face and begin to feel it. And do not try to distance, don't try to get away, just stay with it. And when you begin to understand that that which spontaneously arises is it, and everything else is interpretation, then you begin to understand why in the midst of the greatest terror is the total light of consciousness. And a lot of you scare yourself to death so that you can find the light. And that is a literal statement. Many of you scare yourselves to death so that you can find the light. So, having gone to all the trouble to scare yourself to death, please do not take the secondary step and forget that you did that. Stay with the primary knowing. Stay with the primary knowing that in this feeling, you see, you have a mental idea. God feels this way. And, of course, haven't I helped you a lot? I say, God is this vastness. You see, you mustn't listen to windbags ever, ever, ever. You see, just don't listen. But then, the statement, it's blissful, it's this and this and this. All right, now, in the midst of that terrifying feeling, I promise, therein is the opening. In it, without it changing. And if you'll just keep going back and allowing that spontaneous sense to be there, then you'll begin to override that part of your mind that says, God only feels good. Now, whoever told you that God only feels good, you see? In fact, the question could arise, does God feel at all? You know, we could get off on a very cosmological story today. But let's stay with the work at hand. Anything that spontaneously arises without any secondary motion of you is it and has its gift to give you, as long as you stay with it. As long as you stay with it. That means the most terrifying, frightening moments of your life. Let us say that you're driving in your car and in one moment something happens to you, I don't know what, and you are in total terror. Total terror. In that moment, awakening is totally possible if you are awakened to the fact that this thing that came over you is it. When you begin to do all of your day with this awareness that things come over you, again and yet again, you begin to understand the simplicity of how to see what is really present. And out of this motion, which leaves the mental stress and the ideas of good and bad and right and wrong, it puts it all at ease. It therefore takes such things as guilt and cause and effect out. And of course, when we start talking about getting rid of cause and effect, we're out. So back to the practicality of things. When you begin to realize that in the midst of all of this, the spontaneous, rambunctious energy field that you have absolutely no control over, that you choose to call God, is absolutely in every moment, and you begin to walk around anticipating feeling it in the midst of whatever you are feeling, it begins to strengthen. So we are back to something we have said since the beginning of our work together. That which you concentrate on strengthens. Now, the minute I say that, we have a have to. How do you concentrate on this? You don't concentrate on it, my friends. You simply begin to remember. You begin to remember. You don't have to do anything. If I could say it at all, you have to simply stop doing and just allow whatever is present to be felt. Which is why I have given you a directive for how many years now, as many moments of the hour as you can, will you shut up, sit down, or stand there and allow whatever is imminent to let itself be felt. This magnificent something in the middle of whatever is this magnificent something in it, exactly as it is. And when you begin to run your life with that as the basic knowing, it begins to strengthen. You begin to become more and ever more and ever more aware of it. You do not have to change your lives. You do not have to be better. You do not have to do all of the things that you think. You simply have to be willing to gently and sweetly be aware of what is going on all of the time. Now, this is such a simple teaching that it takes a lot of work to get it. Because if it was an 8-page formula, most of you would have it down in a week with all of the steps. Because you have trained yourself to believe that you can get what you want by doing certain things. And when it comes to seeing the force field of conscious awareness, it begins and ends with the same thing. It is ever constant, and you're simply remembering that it is there is all that you need to do. The mechanism is going to take care of itself. You cannot force it. You cannot demand it. You cannot plead for it. You cannot pray for it. You simply sit around looking for it. And as many moments as you do that, it begins to manifest. And you know, it happens often. You know, you're sitting out, many of you set yourselves stages where you allow yourself to do this. So, you spend hundreds of dollars and you go to the mountains or to the beach or I don't know wherever and you say, now I am going to find it. And so you sit down under a tree and you begin to look around. And lo and behold, people begin to find these amazing truths. Now somebody says, oh, now what you need to do is to go to a certain place at a certain time and it will be there and you go because you believe and you begin to see. Which is why all of these things, like those wonderful days that you set up for the planetary unfoldment coming, all of these are real. Why? Did you walk along and find them? Or did you create them? You created them. You know, this 11-11 and what was the one before? It was the harmonic convergence. Marvelous thing, the harmonic convergence. Marvelous. But it wasn't there until you created it. You know, it wasn't something along the road and that you all stumbled along and said, oh my goodness, harmonic convergence. How wonderful. It wasn't like that. Somewhere a group of some alive consciousness said, hey, I think harmonic convergence would be a great idea. Let's call it this and let's see what we can do. And it moved and it moved. And all over the globe, excitement. That sounds marvelous. But I want you to know, my friends, you created it as you went along. You created it, just as those of you that have been with this thing called Bartholomew have created it all the way along. All the way along. As the thousands and thousands joined it, its face changed, everything's changed. It isn't a given. It isn't something, and your lives aren't like that. Now you have to make up your mind. Either are you walking through a predestined life that you just have, and your only choice is to applaud or to cry, you see. I mean, isn't that the alternative? Either you say, oh, I love it, or I don't want it, I don't want it. But you're stuck with it because, you see, you're walking through this given landscape. Or you can begin, which is what we'd like to leave you with this morning, you can begin with another moment, which is the knowing that in this moment, somehow magically, you, as you can see yourself to be and project yourself to be, plus something else that you don't really know what to call, but is the wonderful creative stuff of consciousness, is constantly present, and at any moment, you can begin to create in the moment something absolutely pleasing. For example, your feelings are not something that is a long corridor called feelings for you that you walk through until you die. What a boring idea. But if you stop to think about it, you'll realize that many of you in some way or other have this concept. What we'd like for you to understand is you all know the entire range of possible creation, don't you? Don't you know that you can create the most abysmal, or the most boring, or the most mediocre, or the most exciting, or the most sensual, or the most financially, I don't care, all the way up to the sublime. You know the full range. So please don't walk around your life forgetting that not only do you know the full range, but as you begin to be alive to knowing the full range, you can begin to create in the moment that range. Why do you think we do all these workshops? Sit around on here and there and the other and the other. Why? Because in those hours, we give the space that allows creation of a higher state of knowing that you are pretending to not have in your range. You pretend it's out of your range. You have to have a certain skill. You have to have a certain instrument such as this here. this Mary Margaret, Bartholomew, whatever, your belief is you have to have, and it's not true. This range is absolutely available to any of you. Absolutely. Why did it come to Mary Margaret? Because she was so desperate. And, you know, desperation breeds, you know, this kind of opening. You know, her back pain was extensive, and so something had to give. All right, so I'm saying to you, all of you, to realize that this range is yours, this incredible range, the highest that you have ever read of, dreamt of, believed, hoped, or prayed for is yours. You couldn't conceive of it if it wasn't in your range. So what keeps you from going there? The belief that you need an instrument other than your own desire to get there. So let's go back to basic teachings 101. Basic teaching 101. That which is doing the desiring is what is being desired. Miss Franklin loves that. That which is doing the seeking is what is being sought. There is no difference. You decide. You have a desire to be happy. In that moment, happiness is present because you're desiring to be happy, and the happiness are one and the same things. They are not two things. It isn't that you decide to be happy and then walk the distance and become happy. That view of life is the thing that traps you. So the excitement that if you're sitting around with a momentary desire to feel bliss, the very urgency and the desire to feel bliss, that in it itself is what you're seeking. Again and again, you will find yourself. This is why you read so many books. Books are a wonderful way for you to get in alignment and excited about and bring those states into your moment. Let us say that you're reading a book about total enlightenment. And in the moment that you are reading it, you and the words and the impressions and so on are intimately connected. In that moment, you have a desire for that. You have a yearning. Now, the minute you have a yearning, that's the primary. Did you decide to have a yearning? Did you say, oh, I'm going to create a yearning over this book. This is at $10.50. Not bad for a yearning. I'm going to hold it. And you begin. Or does yearning simply break out in you? And if it does, what is it? You see, the idea that the yearning is separate from what you're trying to find. We're back to duality. We're back to you have to get there. Pitter-patter up the ladder. Get better and better. You see? But you know, you've pittered and pattered and you've tried to get better and better. And if you've noticed, you know, with a few refinements, you're pretty much the way you are. And if you've noticed, humankind is very much the way it is. Humans are the same all over this planet. And when you are being very honest and you see somebody being a real jackass out there, you look at that and you say, oh, what a jackass. And if you've got sense, you say, and there's part of me out there as well, you see. And the more of those, remember we've talked about this before, the more of those that you can keep in your corral, as many of the jackasses as you can keep close to you, the better, because it keeps you human, and when it keeps you human, it keeps you alive to letting go and not striving. I know I am talking words that make some of you furious. It is your striving that keeps you from experiencing. It is your striving with the will of your ego that, you know, if you've ever been on a diet, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right? It is that striving. And the idea that you can strive and lose weight is real. Of course, what happens when you quit striving? You realize we have a very different situation. What I'm trying to say is some of you are striving and looking so hard that you aren't seeing what is totally present. One of the greatest awakenings of Mary Margaret's life was when she realized that she thought she was looking for a very small, pure, pristine trickle of God consciousness running through her, deeply buried somewhere she knew not where. And that it was her job to keep looking and looking and looking until she found this very thin trickle of purity, of perfection, of God. And in one flash, it fell when she realized that it was all of it. It was so immense and so vast and so ever-present that she'd missed it. And I'm saying the same is true. It is so present, you're missing it. It's like saying, I have to learn to see as you're seeing. I have to learn how to see as you're seeing. I have to learn how to hear as you're hearing. I have to learn how to breathe as you're breathing. You see, it is so simple. It is so simple and so ever-present that you miss it. Oh, I'm very sorry. I didn't miss that. All right. Now, those waves of awareness that we began with, as science begins to move deeper and deeper, they're going to begin to project outward deeper and deeper views of these waves. But my friends, I want you to begin, if you will, to just sit around. You don't have to have your eyes fixed. You don't have to get a special pair of glasses. And don't let any teacher convince you that you do. You do not need a special pair of glasses. You have whatever you have. If you are blind, you can still see this. This has nothing to do with seeing in the physical sense of seeing objects. It has to do with a spontaneous something. And if you'll just move around your life, aware that you are seeing and not worrying about what you're seeing, aware that hearing is present and not be concerned about what you're hearing, be aware of breathing without wondering about whether it's deep or fast or slow or whatever it might mean, when you just keep moving away from that secondary projection and stay with the primary, you're going to begin to feel it. And you are going to begin. Why do people fast? You know, one of the wonderful things of Dr. Aiken's choice here of refusing to eat and so forth is that he's doing what any good yogi would do if he wanted to go to God consciousness, you see. He's not eating. He's being very still, very quiet. A little bit of water, perhaps, but finally, the so-called earthbound energies get quieter and quieter and quieter. And when that happens, the vastness of the magnificent, wondrous energies begin to open up, open up, open up. And so, in the midst, what a marvelous thing he's picked, and I salute him for it. To be able to just decide to calm it down so that the earth energies, you understand? They get less and less and less. Those of you that fasted know how much trouble you can get in because you hardly even see your world anymore. And things that used to bother you just go by without any problem whatsoever. Things that would get you irate in your physical body, oh, that's all right, dear. No, never mind. Well, this wonderful way, and so this is why over the centuries, the way to touch upon this, if you want it intensely, is to begin that kind of activity. Now, many of you do not live lives that will allow you to do that. So you simply have to realize that you can, without having to take your life and twist it and torque it around, you can just begin to walk around being aware that seeing is present. Do you understand? Just look. Isn't seeing present without definition? Isn't hearing present without you doing a thing? Isn't breathing present? If you'll just stay simple, it will begin. It will simply begin. And out of it, things begin to calm down. Things begin to calm down. You begin to get a sense of what underlies and rides through everything that you have imagined to be separate. I hope that questions arise in your mind. I hope that you don't allow your ego to say, oh, I understand, unless you really do understand. And if you do understand, good. But if you take this in as a verbal teaching, then it will never touch your life. It is your gift of the God that created you to be able to see absolutely into the heart of God, which is to see the light of pure consciousness, to be able to see it in its manifold patterns of color and its magnificent patterning of non-color, the absence of color, the clear light past color. All of those words, the void, the magnificence of the emptiness, which is the fullness, all of the words from all of the cultures. It is your God-given, not right, but blessing. To be able to look on life and really see it and hear it and feel it in its essential natural essence. What you are. What you are. How do you do it? If we take any of the great seers, and you know I've said this before, but they don't call them the great thinkers or the great feelers, they call them the great seers. And it's because there is a seeing, not necessarily of the eyes, there's a seeing of being. Things open up and you just see things in a different way. And all of those who have had such exalted states, if we were to open them up and examine their inner mechanism, they do not have a special place to poke in order to activate. They do not have a special organ. They do not have a special anything. You have all the equipment that you need. Your eyes, your being, your breathing, your hearing, all of it is totally adequate. Even if you cannot see and you cannot hear, you are all breathing. And in that simplicity, when you know that you simply have to continue to walk around with the awareness that these things are happening spontaneously, moment after moment, that you have no control, that you are not the prime mover, that you are not that which does it. And the more that you, when you're looking at something, instead of looking at it and deciding, if you could just be aware of, seeing is present. Just that's it. Just, and you begin to do it, and you will begin not to be so addicted to what you see. You will begin to be excited about seeing and realize that there isn't any Tom inside seeing. That seeing is happening, and Tom is translating. But seeing is something outside of your ability to create. And that is the gateway to heaven. When you get to that place of that spontaneous excitement, moment after moment, 51%. Those of you that giggle know, 51%. Keep moving, giving it your full awareness, and then all of a sudden, one magical day, 51%. The power is stronger than the negation. And then, that's when you get the words of flying home. And flying free and experiencing it all. I would like to thank you for your patience. I realize that for many of you, this is not the kind of presentation that you wanted today. I must also, in all honesty, tell you that these kinds of presentations are what we're going to continue doing. So if this does not fit with your way, if you have a deep yearning for something else, I ask you to honor your own response. Have a pleasant incarnation, and we'll see you another time. There are many, many roads to awakening. Many roads to awakening. This is but one. This energy has never claimed to be anything other than one way. If it is too austere for you, acknowledge that. It is an austere path. We don't deny it. For some of you, a little more form and compassion and sweetness is perhaps what you need. If so, my beautiful friends, acknowledge it. Acknowledge it and find that sweetness, that closeness that you might not feel. Since the very beginning, it has been the intention of this energy to enfold you in some way so that you can feel that which is the total love of God awareness. And this has fluctuated during the year is due, of course, to Mary Margaret. But for most of you, there have been moments when you know. When you know. If you have felt any love from this at all, understand that and so much more, is what is present in the heart of consciousness. And so we ask you to do whatever you need to do to find your way to know and feel that every moment of your life, every day of your life. Thank you for the listening, the willingness, and the love.